On Friday, October 18th, the Norris Group proudly presented its 6th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Property Radar and Sean O'Toole, Housing Wire, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and Sean Watkins, Angel Bronsgeist and Sarah Benora, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Barry, MVT Productions, Rhoda Construction, Wilson Investment Properties, and White House Catering. For event video and information, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
And the amount of debt people loaded up on was just large amounts of debt.
I take issue with this idea that it's who we loan to, right? So, I mean, at the peak...
Actually, I was supporting you.
No, I know. But I just... thank you, Chris. But
that's a first.
Really? I was going to say. No good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, no good deed goes unpunished. Fair enough. But I think there's one really important point which gets lost in all this, you know. The whole conversation's become about the qualification of the borrower and do we make the loans to the right people or whatever. And I don't think it has anything at all to do with the folks that borrowed. I think it has to do with the price at which they borrowed at. So, for example, if we tied loan limits to 7% return on rents and we never loaned above that.
I knew,
right?
You were going to get to this.
Yeah, I mean, we made Pulse loans when there was a 1.5% return on loans. So anybody with a Pulse, we'd lend them the money. And that was clearly a problem, no question, right, to your point. But at the bottom, right, a year and a half ago, with prices having gone up so much, we could have made loans to homeless folks with no income or anything else, right, and there'd be zero losses today.
Because we could have taken them over subject
to. Just take them back.
No, we could take them over.
Still, there'd be no losses. The losses because the prices were unsupportable.
Absolutely.
Based on incomes.
I would say price appreciation trumps solid underwriting every time, but now I'm going to say price aggression trumps solid underwriting every time because everybody makes out okay regardless.
But even if we've been appreciated zero from last year.
But as a lender, how do you make a loan and know you're going to get price appreciation endlessly from now till doomsday?
But there are some basic fundamentals. I mean, it was pretty clear from a historical standpoint that prices were getting a little distended.
Chris has a newsletter.
Yeah,
I'll read it.
But I come back to rents, right? So unless you get into a period of time where rents are declining dramatically, and where has that really happened? Maybe Detroit, but, you know, I don't – where do you get declining rents and not Detroit recently?
And by the way, your argument for continued price appreciation in the state is made best by looking at the rent-to-price costs in here in the state. Rents are still incredibly high relative to home ownership. And that says that there's a demand to be here one way or the other, and that's going to translate into higher home costs. So I agree with you. I think it's going to be another close to 20% a year. I think it's just, going forward, I think the interest rate will be nothing.
Well, this is what makes no sense to me. In 2005, you could get a loan with no pulse, maybe a little pulse. I mean, you could they would lend to anyone at the top of the market, and we all knew it was the top of the market. At the bottom of the market, like, nobody can get a loan. Like, what is going on here? It makes no sense to me.
Well, you know, this group in here is called investors, and we have a really hard time getting loans to this day. And our balance sheets can look really good. I remember somebody in this audience went to a lender who he had been using during, let's say, 05 and 06 with a credit line. And he took a couple of years off. He sold his portfolio and made lots of money, had millions of dollars in the bank, took a couple of years off, went to the area that he really majored in, crashed really hard. So stuff that was 300 is now 60 grand. So he says, well, I guess I'll get out of bed and do some of this stuff. So he goes back to the lender, and he said, we haven't had any income for 2 years. So he's got seven figures times a whole bunch of multiples, can't loan to him. He says, you got to fix your monthly income. Okay, so he goes and buys 30 free and clear houses, comes back, the lender goes, well, you don't have it on your 2 years tax returns. So we've made him loans at 9.9%. And that's frustrating in the sense because, you know, it's not sometimes about who to loan to. It's like this room doesn't fit whatever they think is safe, but it's really not true. Is there any future that in the saying, well, investors actually are a pretty good risk, we'll loan them more money? I'm just curious.
You know, clearly the pendulum swung too far, and I think we'd all agree that credit is overly tight. I think we will probably find the right balance again. It's taking probably a lot longer than we might suspect, but again, I think one of the things lenders will ask for is clear reps and warrants from the investors that they sell their loans to. So whether it's the GSEs or FHA, tell me the definition of materiality. Tell me the definition of duration. How long does a borrower have to pay before it's a good loan? And I won't see it back in 5-7 years. So clear reps and warrants is probably, for me, one of the most important things we can do in the short term to get lenders lending again.
Not everybody's going to understand that term. So what do you mean by reps and warrants?
When you sell a loan to the GSEs, I'll use an example, you rep and warrant certain things that it meets basically Fannie or Freddie's underwriting guidelines. Over the past 5 years, lenders have been in a position where we've had lenders defending the definition of a guideline versus, that was a guideline versus a technical default. And so it's been a bit of an environment where lenders have learned, well, I'm never going to do that again. So credit has gotten tighter and tighter. We are almost through the legacy book of business. FHFA has suggested that we all be through the legacy book. So anything prior to conservatorship, which is prior to 2008, we need to clean up and get done by the end of this year. I think that's going to be huge. And then FHFA, who's the regulator over Fannie and Freddie, has given us a little bit of definition around reps and warrants, but what lenders want is tell me the definition of materiality. When is it material that I truly versus a technical footfall? And that's still some clarity that lenders are looking for.
Okay. Biggest concern for your industry in the next year, building or hedge funds or whatever, or both?
The biggest concern is always the economy, but it seems to be going along okay. The biggest concern my clients have is the price that they're paying for land right now because of the imbalances. I think the one thing that's not getting said up here I wanted to throw in, though, is I don't think we do a good enough job in this audience putting your lender hat on and really understanding what it's like to be a lender and to have to deal with putbacks of loans you made to very good people where you dotted every I and crossed every T and you still lost $200,000 and all the lawsuits you've had to deal with while they're telling you, loosen credit. By the way, I'm suing you for billions of dollars for all the credit that you did. I mean, they're balancing both. And then the last piece I want to throw in on that piece too is Dodd-Frank, I understand if the loan is underwritten improperly and gets sold, the buyer of the loan will then be liable. So there is no appetite to buy your security from the bank because BlackRock and PIMCO are not going to take that risk. It's stupid. So as soon as they get rid of that, then there is a huge appetite right now for 4.5% to 5% interest rates backed by assets that are rising in value. There's a huge appetite for that. And that's really the only thing I think they need to fix to get credit flowing again.
Okay. Leslie, your biggest concern for...
Really, jobs. You know, I think a sustained improvement in housing is going to take a lot stronger job growth than we have right now. And, you know, you've got structural issues, you've got cyclical issues, and yes, things are improving. But you look at the, and I don't, I'm not good with numbers tonight, but there's a lot of people on disability that aren't getting counted in unemployment. When you look at, you know, African-American teenagers and white males over the age of 55 and these niches, the unemployment rate is very, very high. And again, it kind of circles back to this whole thing about where are the first-time home buyers going to come from, and they're not going to come from anywhere if they're not able to move out from their parents' house because they can't get a job with decent income. So I think I really worry about the fundamentals. I worry about income distribution and how skewed it's getting. I worry about social unrest. I mean, there's just so many things to worry about, really. It's hard to pick just one.
Christopher, what about yourself? For the economy or for, you know, a specific industry?
How about I go for a nation and state? My worry for the nation is the ability for Congress to do so much harm to our economy. I'm worried that the uncertainty they began is just going to carry over into another big mess, February mess. Again, too many people pursuing ideological agendas and not paying attention to the pragmatic realities on the ground, and it scares me to death that we have these kind of folks leading us. We live in a two-party, one-party state, for all intent and purposes, and that worries me. State level, I'm going to go back to those high housing costs. This is a state that desperately needs to increase the supply of housing relative to its population and population growth. We have a lot of social issues over this. Again, there's economic issues because of this particular problem. For those of us who can afford these expensive homes, you know, great for us. But the overall health of the economy is dependent on having an appropriate amount of housing, and that goes back to CEQA. I mean, this disaster in this state, I just hate that law. It is the most ridiculous thing. And the so-called CEQA reform almost made the situation worse.
So what's CEQA?
California Environmental Quality Act. This is the tool by which unions and lawyers get to hold up every home builder in the state and take off the 20% off at the top. You know, it's a little thing. It's ridiculous. Our so-called... I'm really tired. Our so-called...
Well, most of our fun is in the last half hour. It's all right.
Yeah. CEQA reform, and on top of the environmental thing, I mean, at the last minute when they were doing our so-called CEQA reform, they tried to slip into another provision of the bill. I don't know if you caught this. It was going to be on top of your environmental impact report, you were going to have to do a social justice impact report. And thankfully, it was a midnight thing. I don't know who slipped it in. They did it at 11:45. It was one of these kind of things. Every chamber in the state went crazy. They headed off with the pass. But we still have, you know, but that's the kind of stuff that's going on right now. And again, these same people who support CEQA are the same people who want to put affordable housing mandates on all new construction. And it goes on and on and on. You can't do this.
So that's why California builders moved to Houston?
No, they want to build here because, candidly, if you can get the permit, it's hugely profitable.
Okay.
I mean, in a very real sense, let me be conspiratorial. The big builders may not want to change it because the margins they get in the business they do get here is actually quite increased as a result of this.
The margin all goes to the landowner.
Right.
Okay, then the landowners want.
Right.
And the
right.
city that collects the building fees, apparently. Okay. All right, Sean, biggest concern?
You know, I think my biggest concern definitely is just the regulatory swing too far. So to follow up on kind of what Chris was saying.
You guys going to agree there? Again?
Yeah, no, I actually have agreed with a lot of what Chris has to say tonight.
Wait, I have to take issue with that.
Okay, perfect. you know, and I think just a lack of political, you know, leadership there. The thought that we can increase affordable housing by adding taxes to housing just seems so, like, nonsensical to me. But that literally is, you know, what we believe. We can add fees to housing to fund affordable housing. And it just, you know, and that's the political environment we're in right now, that, you know, we can tighten credit to improve lending. You know, just nothing makes sense anymore.
Four years ago, we had all the affordable housing we wanted.
Yeah.
We didn't have to do a thing.
I mean, it was a huge problem, and we needed to fix it. And so let's withhold all that inventory and keep anybody from buying it, push prices back up.
Right.
And then, you know, we can, you know, because really affordable housing, I think, in our political environment is not about helping people afford homes. It's about helping a handful of folks that build affordable housing or that benefit from running affordable housing programs that happen to be well affiliated, right, to make some money. And that's maybe an overly cynical view, but, you know, I think we're at that point.
I like cynical views.
There's been a lot of head shaking going on, by the way. There's been a lot of agreement in what's being said. Yep.
So I think three things that intersect. One, I would worry about broad access to credit for qualified consumers. I worry about a competitive marketplace. If you think that competition is good for consumers, how many lenders with this complexity of the regulatory environment are going to throw in the towel and be done? And then, you know, the notion that housing is critical to our economy, and are we going to derail our housing recovery?
So, you know, jobs is clearly the number one worry, and that gets me to sort of my number two worry, which is that we haven't discussed a lot, which is what goes on in the rest of the world. In the early stages of this recovery, exports were a big part of rebuilding employment in the U.S., and, you know, there's still all sorts of problems in Europe with the euro, the Middle East. Is China slowing? And all those things with just a much more trade-dependent economy with very low sort of domestic innate growth for the moment. I worry about a negative shock from outside the U.S.
Okay. We're looking at a clock that says 22 minutes, but we're gonna end at 10:30 because there's just been a long night for everybody. So we have about 7 more minutes left. There'll be a couple more questions, but there's a couple of things that we're used to having that we think are always going to be there: 30-year fixed mortgage, deductible interest on taxes. I'm just curious about everybody's opinion about those holy grails. Are they going to stick around for the duration?
I want to take a second one.
Go right ahead.
Because there's two economists here, and I presume you have the same views. Well, maybe you don't. I'm not sure. Actually, we shouldn't ask you.
I'll go hide then.
Yeah. No, only because I don't want to put you in any compromising position. You know, the one thing that every economist, left wing, right wing, you ask any of them, and they will tell you, the homeowner interest deduction is a travesty. It's a ridiculous subsidy to housing. It distorts capital markets in every way. The only people who benefited from it were the people who own homes when it was put into place, because ever since then we're all paying higher prices because more or less we have subsidized interest rates. It's a crazy thing to put in place. You should get rid of it. It will never be gotten rid of. It is fixed in stone. It will never go away, period.
They don't know whether to applaud you or throw tomatoes at you.
No, it's true. I'm sorry. It's true. It is. You cannot justify it. There's not one logical model out there why that thing should be in place.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a different spin on it. We did a white paper on it, and people forget that the standard itemized deduction for a couple is $12,000. So 70% of the people who buy homes today don't even use the mortgage interest deduction because it doesn't add up to the $12,000. All of the benefit accrues to 5 states. This is one of it. And there already has been some movement in North Carolina did it to drop the dollar amount. So I do think you could see maybe the dollar amount go down. It's not a budget saver. It's I think $55 billion a year or something like that, all of it. I mean, everyone in this room uses it, but we're really the minority.
Well, I think the thing, you know, you could see second homes hit, or you could see that $1 million cap go down. I think the more interesting issue, kind of philosophically, is what do we believe about the government's role in housing? Do we believe that it should be subsidized in some way? And I clearly can never disagree with Chris here, because from an economist's point of view, there are more efficient ways to subsidize home ownership than the mortgage interest deduction. All that being said, it's been around for an awfully long time, and changing it when the housing sector is one of the strongest, you know, parts of the economy right now is probably not a good thing. I mean, I can give you a zillion reasons why you shouldn't touch it, but, you know, theoretically, you can do it better other ways. But really, what should the role of government be? And I think with respect to the GSEs, it really does boil down to that, right? I mean, that's one of the, you know, when you look at a new structure, I mean, private capital is waiting on the sidelines to come in at a huge spread. You know, so it's not an issue of, it's really the price at which that would happen.
But they want a 30-year fixed rate mortgage. The appetite of bond funds to buy 30-year fixed rate mortgages is huge, and that's why that's not going to go away either.
It's huge. They want to buy 30-year fixed.
How many trillions of dollars of, I mean, PIMCO manages $2 trillion of bonds, I think, themselves. I mean, they're looking for more things to buy, and if you're running a bond fund and can get a 4.5% coupon, that's a pretty nice return right now. So I think there's a huge appetite for that. Not the banks. The banks should not hold it on their balance sheet. That's a death knell. But to offload it into the bond market, I think is
you know, I think it's interesting your comment on private capital is waiting in the sidelines. I agree. If they're coming back, they're coming back with a big spread and a bigger yield. But I would also tell you the GSEs or FHFA have been raising G fees, the guarantee fees. You know, we've had, you know, some lenders have had 7-8 G fee increases in the last 18 months. If you look at the G fees that we are paying, ultimately our consumers are paying for the credit quality we're doing right now, it's way outsized. And the purpose was to crowd in private capital, and private capital is not back yet. So it's not working.
Didn't the rate on the jumbo drop below the rate on the 30-year?
Yes.
And that would tend to suggest that what you're saying is right, that there's a lot of capital sitting out there. Because if you can get a jumbo at a lower rate than a Fannie or Freddie.
But you look at
what private capital is lending. They're lending, you know, 15-20% down, you know, 780 credit scores. It is for the wealthiest borrowers. It is not for middle-class America.
Yeah, and G fees and increased interest at risk, because they now know they have increased risk, will increase the spread over treasuries. So what, we're going to have a 5% interest rate? I mean, that's still a great rate. You include it in the rate and you move on.
Okay. Well, that makes housing even more unaffordable in California. So what was the... I've got a question about that statement. Affordability, that kind of tells you where you are historically. We're at 36%. It's been like in the 90s when we had that downturn, we got up to 39 or 40. That was max. We get down to 17 normally, so we're nowhere close to where we were. So there's a lot of headroom for price to go up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you said everybody's leaving because it's not affordable.
Did I say
everyone?
I never said anything close to war. I said there's a segment in the middle.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice try.
Nice try. All right. Guys, it's been really fun. I've really enjoyed this panel. I knew I would. Thank you very much. And thank you for your support, and we had a great night. I really enjoyed everything that went on tonight. And we'll do it again next year. All right. Thank you guys very much. Thank you. Okay.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Claudia Buys Houses, Coldwell Banker Town and Country, Elite Auctions, Phoebe, for investors by investors, Homevestors, In a Day Development, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts Inc., John Merrill Investments Inc., Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Associates, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club Phoebe, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limo, Primary Residential Mortgage, Realty 411 Magazine, Real Wealth Network, REIExpo.com, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Association of Realtors, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA, Tony Alvarez, The Bottom Feeders, Tri-Emerald Financial Group, and Westin South Coast Plaza, See isurvivedrealestate.com for video of the live event and more on our sponsors.